Is it ethical to wear fur? That's been a debate for decades now. Humans started wearing fur 170,000 years ago. For many centuries, fur has been prized as a luxury garment, and fur sales have risen dramatically in the last few years. Animal rights activists say no animal should suffer and die for the sake of fashion. One boutique furrier is making an effort at having it both ways by using, wait for it, roadkill. While most fur is taken from farm-raised animals, the company Petite Mohr sells high-end fashion furs from animals scraped off the side of the road. Its founder says it's an ethical solution to the $35 billion fur industry. Pamela Paquin joins us now. Welcome, Pamela.
Thank you very much for having me.
Pamela, you call this accidental fur and not roadkill. Why?
I find it more respectful of the animals who've lost their lives. Roadkill seems to be very dismissive of the value of them as individuals and contributors to our ecosystem. And being a sustainability professional, of course, I'm quite aware of those, such as beaver and coyote and fox.
So what gave you the idea for this company? Have you always been passionate about animals or fur? And tell us about the name you chose.
Certainly. I have been raised as a farmer and became a sustainability consultant, worked in Europe in Denmark, where much of the world's mink is produced, and used to carry my ferrets around to the furriers and ask them to stop. And when I came back to New England as a new mom, I saw all the bodies and it was very upsetting and seemed incredibly wasteful. And when I found out that it was 1 million animals a day that are killed on the roads in the United States, that seemed like a massive gap given that they were all being thrown away.
So, Pamela, explain to us how you came up with the name for your company.
Petit Mohr quite literally means the little death in French. However, it can also refer to a woman's state of bliss after having an incredibly pleasurable and sensual experience. And that's the state of being that I would like for my clients to be able to feel with their furs, that we now can celebrate our sensuality and we can also celebrate our furs.
And do you collect and skin all these animals yourself?
I collect a portion of them. I also have sources that I use.
And sources like animal control specialists who supply you or middlemen?
Yes, I work with highway departments and animal control officers, and I can only collect in Massachusetts, and I'm obliged to have what's called a trapping license and a fur buyer's license in order to do so. I cannot collect in Connecticut or in Vermont. So I have men in those states who, like taxidermists, for example, or wildlife specialists that can sell me the pelts that they receive from highway departments because I can't take raw bodies across state lines, essentially.
So other alternatives to farm-raised or wild fur include fur from invasive species like the nutria, which is a rodent, and also vintage and repurposed fur. Are you moving into those areas? Do you see them as equally ethical?
I'm not moving into them, and my feeling is that everybody has a different sense of ethics. I provide the pieces that I feel comfortable with. So for me, given that all these animals are being wasted and thrown away, that's where I'm focused. I've had people contact me with vintage fur jackets. Would you like to have them? No, thank you. There are people who do that, and I respect their work because it's one step further away from fur farming and killing these animals intentionally.
Well, we can't see or feel what you make over the radio, but describe for us some of your products, and what is your favorite piece?
Currently, in my store, I have two red foxes, one from Vermont, one from Connecticut. The Connecticut fox has a black tummy, which I have not seen very much of. Normally, it's white. And he's been made into a double-sided fur neck muff. And I can't wait to see who he goes home with. Hmm. But those pieces where you can use them in multiple ways, to me, seem very just sensible. Why buy something and spend money on it when you can only use it in one way? Isn't it wonderful when it can be used in a multitude of different ways?
Well, you're referring to your pelts as he's and she's, and I understand you even give clients photos of the animals that their garments came from?
Absolutely. When desired, I can offer that information. Some people, they feel, I had a Finnish woman, for example, that ordered a black bear neck muff, and she's always felt very connected to black bear. They are in her homeland of Finland as well. And she wanted to kind of bring on more of that spirit in herself.
Hmm. I'm seeing on your website a fawn scarf for $2,500, a foxtail wrist cuff for $500. These are very pricey items. Who's buying them?
That's a very good question. Well, I have clients from all over the world currently. Obviously, people who have the money and who feel that there is really no option. If you're going to wear fur, then you're going to wear fur that comes from a place that honors the animals and lets them live wild and free.
But as an animal lover, are you simply accepting roadkill as inevitable?
Well, I think until we stop driving, it will continue to happen, which is a shame. And part of what I do is I donate a portion of my profits to building wildlife underpasses through the Critical Pathways Project in Vermont. So I'd like to see that solved. I'd like to see Jersey barriers, for example, with holes so that animals can get through instead of having a kind of a gauntlet of death, that line of concrete that cuts them off from moving across the roads. So I'm very much focused on the systems dynamics of any particular issue. So for example, when you speak about the price point of my furs, I pay my seamstresses $20 an hour, which in Massachusetts is required if you want to have a living wage. So people who buy my products are also buying into the belief that they're going to pay for something in a way that is respectful of the people who actually make it.
How do you respond to critics who say, yes, your animal skins are accidental, you're producing what can be called sustainable furs, but out on the street, people don't know that. Do your designs promote a larger industry that kills living creatures for luxury clothing?
Well, you know, a lot of people might say that about using energy. For example, you might not be able to tell looking at somebody's home whether they're using solar or petroleum. But of course, the individual will know that, and their buying into solar energy helps reduce carbon emissions. It's all in small steps.
Well, protesters have certainly gotten attention with fake blood and gruesome images, including at a fur show in Paris for this fall-winter season. But at the same time, we know world fur exports are up. They more than doubled in the 5 years before 2013 from $2 billion to $4 billion. So how do you, as a one-woman operation, revolutionize such a huge industry? And how can you get fashion houses to follow your example?
That's a wonderful question and something I've addressed from the beginning. I have reached out to PETA, to the Anti-Fur Society. I've reached out to the International Fur Federation and the American Fur Council. Because for me, I find that if I'm going to demonize any one of them, we're not going to be able to move forward with a constructive conversation that's generative and produces change. I donated to PETA's anti-fur campaign when I was younger. You know, and living in Denmark, I was very frustrated by it. And then I saw the industry growing. And so again, if you're frustrated by what you see and you don't like it, there's this point at which you have to stop complaining and actually do something.
Well, certainly doing something about it. Going from supporter of the anti-fur campaigns to maker of her own high fashion furs made from roadkill, Pamela Paquin is the founder of Petite More Fur. Pamela, thanks so much for joining us.
And thank you so much.